Retro Game Radio 2005. Keep it retro.
Retro Gaming Radio.
Hey, we have another game based on the Quake 2 engine.
Kimberly, come in, are you okay?
You're now listening to Retro Gaming Radio.
And you're listening to Retro Gaming Radio.
Welcome to the program. Retro Gaming Radio 2005. Shane Armadillo, Brian Smith behind Mix Board. Keep it retro.
Hello, folks. Welcome to the March 2005 edition of Retro Gaming Radio. This is Shane Armadillo, your host. In spirit, our good, dearly departed friend Brian Kid Hype Smith behind the spiritual mixing board this month. And welcome to the show. We have a lot of show for you this month. We're going to have a giant size bits and bytes segment, as always. We're going to have two classic style shareware gaming reviews, one of Heavy Weapon from PopCap, and Zen Words, created by a very famous classic gaming programmer. Stick around to find out who is the author of Zen Words. Pretty cool little game. We're going to do an editorial commentary this month on nostalgia. Where is it? What is it? Is it dying? Is it dead? We're going to cover all aspects of it on our editorial commentary. We also have an interview with Michael Battilana. He is the head up of the Amiga Forever division of Cloanto. Cloanto, of course, the Amiga Forever folks have created a turnkey, all-in-one, easy Amiga emulation solution. And there's some very cool things that are new with Amiga Forever 6. We're going to have him on to talk about that. And as a little cross-promotion action, Michael's agreed to give three of our lucky listeners away a copy, absolutely free, of the Amiga Forever 6 CD-ROM title. Stay tuned to figure out how you can get in on that. We have all of this. We're going to reveal another Easter Egg DVD. I believe it's our last one this month. We got such a huge show, so let's get right to it. We now like to have our interview from the Classic Gaming Expo 2004 with Michael Battilana from Cloanto, makers of the great Amiga Forever 6 package, the only legal way to emulate an Amiga on your PC without owning an Amiga yourself. He talks a lot about the product, he talks about the direction Cloanto takes, and more interesting, what it took to actually make Amiga Forever in terms of the licensing and the copyrights. Even as much as I knew about Amiga, I did not know some of this stuff. So those of you who are interested in some of that sort of thing, you're in for a real treat. Without further ado, here is Michael Battilana at Classic Gaming Expo 2004. This is Shane R. Monroe at the Classic Gaming Expo 2004. I'm here with Michael Battilana.
Yes, that's right. Thank you, Shane.
Yeah, from Cloanto, makers of Amiga Forever. We've talked about the package a lot, of course, on the show. We reviewed one of the earlier packages. We now have six in our possession, so we'll get a chance to look at that. Michael, tell us a little bit about what Amiga Forever is, sort of a little history about that.
Yep. Amiga Forever aims to be an all-in-one Amiga emulation solution, which not only has all Amiga ROM and operating system versions included and ready to run, but it also has a nice part of history. For example, you get videos like the launch of Amiga in New York, 1985, speeches by Jay Miner, the deathbed vigil by Dave Haney. Byte magazine gave us permission to reprint the 1985 cover story about the Amiga, and all of that we try to restore, clean up, find good quality copies and so on. So you get a nice feeling of not only being able to run the Amiga in your PC or Mac or other system, but also to feel and be there in 1985, '86, '94 when things were happening. And even if you had an Amiga, there's so much interesting material there that, it's very touching for some people. It's really, it's interesting, it's emotional, it's a lot of things.
So it's important to recognize, because a lot of people say, well, why should I pay for Amiga Forever mm-hmm. when I can go get WinUAE for free, which is the core of the product, which is WinUAE, modified, of course. Mm-hmm. And, of course, they can always go and steal the ROMs from somewhere, you know, although it's getting harder and harder to find those.
But you know, why? What's the value add? Why should I go through? And it's important to understand that Amiga Forever is not just WinUE thrown on a disk with a couple of MPEGs on it. Explain yes. how it's different.
Well, that's an issue in our society, that when you can do something, you can technically do something, and it costs zero to do it, it makes you think why we have so many barriers and limitations and so on. It's interesting to keep thinking about that, I agree. But also, the emulation itself, you know, in 1997, UAE was a problem for the Amiga companies. And you may remember in those days, there were Sony and other emulators which were just shut down by the courts, and there were legal actions being taken. And Gateway even said in some news groups, and not only Gateway, but also personally some engineers and people working at the former Commodore and the new companies, something had to be done about this. So Amiga Forever was the way that allowed everybody to be happy. So there was a legal coverage for this work in UAE and WinUAE. There was a legal way for the ROMs to be offered and make the owners of the intellectual property happy. So basically what we did is we licensed all Amiga patents, trademarks and copyrights, which also applied to the emulation without ROMs, or at least they are claimed to apply to some degree. And we license that for Amiga Forever. Everything we do, including the use of the Amiga Forever name, website, related items with the Amiga name, we have a written permission to do that, and the Amiga companies get paid by that.
And actually, go ahead.
Actually, it's different Amiga companies over time.
Right, right. So, if you who did you originally acquire them from? Was it actually Commodore at the time?
No, it was Amiga International and Gateway. The contract was approved after long talks and discussions and changes by both of them, and it was signed and represented by both Gateway and Amiga International.
Now, a lot of people don't know that Gateway actually picked up some of the Amiga patents.
And they still own them, as far as I know. They bought them from the Eskom company in Germany,
right?
Which bought them from the bankruptcy of Amiga UK and Commodore International and so on, and Gateway kept the patents. They considered them to be a very precious asset. So as you see, it's not just about the ROM and workbench discs or whatever.
So if Gateway does go away and they get sold to Dell, let's say Dell buys the controlling interest in them or whatever, does that mean you have to relicense these from them?
If we are notified of a transfer of license, we'll see how to deal with this.
Sure.
As far as the patent part which is concerned, it has to be taken into account that some of these are expiring. We're talking 1984, 2004 now, 20 years is the... in those years you have between 17 and 20 years for US patents, so we're really seeing the patent issue as a whole disappear. It leaves you with copyrights and trademarks. So, but yes, of course, like we already did when things changed hands, we talked to all parties. And one also has to say that for these companies, it's a minuscule thing. It's a very small.
Sure, it's very difficult sometimes to get in the door.
That's
right.
You
know, you can't call up Dell and say, "Hey, I'd like to come talk to you about these."
And that's why it's
difficult.
You
don't know anything about.
You know, on one hand, it's nothing to them, but that makes it even more difficult because you have to go through a 20-page contract just because it has to be done, because if they didn't care about their patents, then it would diminish the value of the entire patent portfolio. I mean, they have entire offices with lawyers who do only that, and they cannot ignore that something is being not respected. Otherwise, it's like not caring about it, meaning sort of losing it, you know. And that's why they have to consistently, as I understand it, do things the proper way, which we have been successful in doing now for 7-8 years.
Now, Amiga Forever actually contains not just Kickstart 1.3 and, you know, Workbench 1.3. Basically, you get it all, right? Go down the list of... Because people who are at least familiar with the Amiga know that the Amiga went through a lot of changes from 1.1 to 3.1. Give them an idea, just kind of rattle off all the things they get.
Well, you start from 1.0, actually.
Well, 1.0 was the floppy-based Kickstart, though, right?
1.1, 1.2, and 1.3 were also floppy-based.
Although 1.3 got embedded, though, right? 1.0.
Oh, sorry, you mean the Kickstart.
The Kickstart, yes.
They were placed on ROM as of version, well, when the Amiga 500 came out, because the Amiga 1000, you could use 1.3 on the Amiga 1000, and it was on a floppy disk.
Right.
Then they added hard disk boot support in 1.3, and future versions, they all work both on workbench and hard disk, workbench floppy and hard disk boot systems, and there was no Kickstart any longer. The Kickstart, which was a special pre-boot ROM, which Commodore didn't have time to place in ROM when the Amiga 1000 was shipping, was available, as you said, on a separate floppy disk.
Right.
And we have all those ROMs as well, including the original boot code, which plays a small musical tune just to remind you to insert the Kickstart disk. It's all in Amiga Forever as well.
So they get them all?
Yes, they get CDTV special ROMs, CD32 ROMs, all the way to the latest ROMs. And for 3.9, some parts we had to license directly, like the latest web browser and so on. So the people get more than just the bare-bones system. For example, up to 1.3, Commodore had the speech synthesis.
Right.
Or there were tools like fast fonts and other utilities in Workbench which had separate contracts and licenses which expired. So technically, our contract with the mega companies is not enough to give you that. We had to find the people doing the speech synthesis.
So you had to go back to the narrator people.
That's right.
And actually found license them.
That's
separately.
That's right. The same for other files, even in the old Workbench.
Wow.
We had to find people who own rights over like some fonts, for example. And all of that, if you look at the legal notes at the root of the CD, you will find a boring, long list of credits and contributors and everything with the copyrights. And so it's hundreds of names.
So once again, I got to stress that you guys are not, you didn't buy, you know, Kickstart 1.3, say, you know, I could make some money by throwing this on a disc with UAE, getting a couple of videos and throwing it on there and selling it. This is really a complete, I mean, you've done your homework.
Yeah, it's, you know, even if it was, as you say, that alone is a lot of work. But it's not. You will see the quality in detail, I hope. You will see the consistency between the various parts. For example, when you see the Amiga launch in New York, and you see Bob presenting something, some demos, when you see Jay Miner showing something, or when you see the Byte cover story, they all show some software, demos, and not only demos, but all of that is cross-integrated in a way that you can play with the same tools. You see them in a video, you see them in an article, you can play with them in the emulation, they are there as well. One click, ready to run for you,
if you see the juggler demo on a video, you can turn right around and run it yourself and see what it was really like to have been.
It's included in Amiga Forever 6, yes.
See. Now, for the people who are like totally freaked out about trying to make an Amiga emulator run, because let's be honest, if you didn't like live, eat, and breathe Amiga, the UAE emulator is less than easy to use.
That's right.
And a lot of people who have been interested in a casual sense say, I'd like to play Deluxe Galaga on Amiga, but I looked at UAE and it's just not going to happen.
Yes.
And what have you done to circumvent that problem?
Yes, that's the feedback we get too, and it looks like it worked, because a lot of people who gave up on trying to configure WinUAE, find the ROMs in some way on the internet, or get them from the Amiga, they just found it so much easier to get Amiga Forever and run it. There's absolutely nothing required. If you have a CD version, you insert the CD, a launcher window appears, one click, you choose the configuration, and it runs. There's nothing else required from external sources. The same for the downloadable version. You install it and run it. The CD version you can run from CD or install. So you have a choice. You can carry it to your school, work, office, wherever, where you cannot maybe install. Okay, it runs from CD, fine. It even boots from CD now. You don't need an operating system. And even in that case, no configuration required.
Wait a minute. You can boot from the Amiga Forever CD?
Of course, yes.
Without having Windows or anything running?
That's
and it will bring up the Amiga emulator?
Yes. That's an exciting new feature of Amiga Forever 6.
Man. So I was just talking about that. I wanted that like 2 days ago.
Yeah.
That's
and,
amazing.
And we have... we took the Knoppix Linux distribution and we modified it in a way that it fits in 50 to 60 megabytes. So that was a lot of work as well. We chose that distribution because it's well known for supporting diversity of hardware. For example, look at notebooks and so on. There are other attempts in doing similar things and they didn't work out so well on a variety of hardware configurations. But our Knoppix-based solution, I think, beats them all. It supports really all hardware I've ever seen, PC-wise. And you just insert the CD, it boots. It doesn't ask you any question, and in half a minute...
No having to format some partition?
No, absolutely nothing. And it's also safe, I have to stress, that all PC partitions by default are read-only. So you can really use the CD, insert it in a PC, and feel safe that it's not going to touch anything on your PC.
So technically speaking, you could go to, say, I'm going to do a little plug here, my Deluxe Galaga website.
Mm-hmm.
You could download, say, the LHA version of it, which is the hard drive version of the game, bring it down to your local hard drive, extract it using WinZip.
Yes.
You could boot off of that CD.
Yes.
Run the Amiga emulator, open up a local PC drive, your
yes.
local drive, go to that folder and run Deluxe Galaga,
yes.
and it should figuratively work.
Yes. You'll have to mount the drive. That's the only thing.
That's the one thing that's not covered by default.
It doesn't mount them in the Amiga workbench, but you can do that, yes. And if you forget the CD in the drive, that's funny. You will see the Amiga booting and you won't understand what's happening. You know, you can leave the CD in somebody else's drive as a joke, and they will see the Amiga booting when they switch on the PC. That's funny.
That is funny.
I have a question. We had a lot of complaints on the forums back when they were alive. That because you guys do the, you were Shane, were you emailing him?
Yeah, he was the guy that was responding.
Were you the one that was responding?
Yeah,
you remember all the crap that you were getting on the that it was even with all the stuff that you threw on the CD. I'm pretty sure it was the idiot factor was there, but a lot of people were still having problems. And they said that the support wasn't there, or you guys kind of pretty much gave up on some people. Is that true?
You always will have a small percentage of people who are not satisfied, in which case we also offer a refund if they wish. That's always an option. In general, the feeling I get is that people are amazed by fast response times, you know, often within minutes. The frequently asked questions site on our site and the troubleshooting section on our site, they try to have to cover all issues. So when somebody new emerges in technical support, it also goes straight online. It's true. Sometimes there are both questions about things which are online and there are questions about things that cannot be solved. Like you cannot read an Amiga floppy disk on a PC. And some people are really angry about this because they had expectations and it's not easy to do much more than what we already do, which is include software to connect an Amiga to a PC or refer them to the Cartweasel and so on, but it's not easy to explain that an emulation alone cannot overcome a hardware issue. That's one example, for example.
So these guys that wrote and basically said, you know, I wrote, nobody responded to me, you know, or whatever.
I'd have to see, you know, sometimes email has a problem.
Sure.
If you don't get a reply within 1 or 2 days, you may want to check.
So I'd
like to see the case.
Yeah, your idea would be that, you know, you don't know the particular issues that were mentioned on the forums
Yes, I know about, you mentioned a thread, right? And I think I replied in my email at the time I checked the correspondence by that person. And I said when we replied, within hours, I think it was the first time. And I think I answered that question in the thread itself. Now, to be honest, I don't remember, but I had checked it. So whenever you bring something to my attention, I have a way to look at it.
Well, you know what? I remember it. You did respond, and the guy said, yeah, you responded, but he was not satisfied with the response.
Yes.
And that's what it all boiled down to. Basically, it was like, you sucked. And the how do you pronounce your name?
Colanto.
Colanto people suck because you did not give him the answer he wanted. Even though you did, he didn't say, he was like, yeah, they responded, but it wasn't what I wanted to hear.
Do you remember the actual issue, what it was? Or did they even
He couldn't get the package to run. He was saying that it wouldn't run certain things.
Yes, no, he had Amiga in a box, I think. And
That's what it was.
He was asking technical support for Amiga in a box, which we gladly provided, even if it wasn't really...
That wasn't even their product. Guy was asking for support for Amiga in a box, and it wasn't even their product.
Oh.
Somebody, just to give an overview so that he understands what the difference between Amiga in a box and Amiga Forever is.
Well, Amiga in a box is by my friend JB in the UK. He's now in Japan, by the way. As I see it, right now, it's a set of freely available Amiga add-ons. The reason why it's called Amiga in a box is that originally it illegally included Amiga ROM and operating system files.
Right.
And then Gateway told them to remove that. That's why it's called Amiga in a box. Right now it's not Amiga in a box. It's just a set.
Amiga used to be in a box.
Amiga used to be in a box.
It's a set of files which you can get from Aminet. And I have to say, some people like, well, I don't want to mention names, but some authors of those packages said, well, why are you pre-installing this without even asking me? I have my own distribution on Aminet, and I would like that one to be respected. So when we do the same in Amiga Forever, first of all, we ask, we get credits, we ask them to check if they like how we did it. You know, we add glow icons and so on, so that's a lot of work as well. And everything is an interactive process with the developers, even if it's for a package which is freely available on Aminet. Of course, as you say, you can take things, throw them in an archive, and make them available. That's not what we do. That's what others do. And that's what we sometimes have to do technical support for as well.
So basically, to sum it up.
Well, what happened was, that's what it was. It was, you couldn't get Amiga in the box to work with Amiga Forever.
Right.
And so, instead of the guy going, Amiga in the box sucks, they were going, you guys suck.
Right.
Which wasn't fair.
But, you know.
The guy just basically beat up on you.
Yeah, but you know, installing Amiga in a box on Amiga Forever is just like installing Amiga in a box on any other Amiga systems. You know, when you buy Amiga Forever, it comes with a pre-installed Amiga OS environment where you can even easily remove the add-ons and get to a very standard environment. It's like buying a new Amiga. If you have a problem installing Amiga in a box on a new Amiga, it's the same issues you are. But still, you know, we worked with JB, and he, when he had more time, he also had special instructions online. For example, Workbench 3.1, Amiga in a box insisted on having that on a floppy disk image, whereas we installed it, because it didn't fit on a floppy disk, we installed it in a mounted directory, in the system partition. And still, Amiga in a box still asks for the Workbench disk. So on our knowledge base, we have an article dealing with that, explaining.
Sure, you have to alias it.
So we explain how do you. We added a script to Amiga Forever to create this image.
Right.
So to better support Amiga in a box. But, you know, there's
secrets.
Like you
said, you can't make everybody happy all the time.
You can try badly. Now, there are secrets, I think, in technical support, which we all wonder why they are not applied by companies who have the money. Like, okay, before I answer you, let's say I'm technical support and you're the customer who has a problem, before I hit that send button, I should check once more that I really answered your question. Because so often it's just a case closed issue, and that's what they want to do, close a case and copy and paste some canned answer, and it doesn't apply to our case. So it's very important, for example, I think, to see that the matter has really been addressed and the questions have been asked. But beyond that, we have Amiga users who have never used a PC. We have PC users who have never used an Amiga. And some of these are very, very difficult because they don't know the difference between a left and a right mouse button and so on. And you really have to guide some users in a way that, okay,
you're not getting paid enough to do that.
we have a software which costs $1,000, and it has a support contract.
Right.
And for $29.95, often you spend a lot of time, and just to make the customer happy, you even call them back. You know, we try to make the customer happy, but it's not always possible, especially not with our budget. Amiga Forever as a whole is in red, I would say. You know, you see me attending these events, like this show, the Classic Gaming Expo, and it doesn't make any financial sense. It's okay, I visit some other clients in the area, I see old friends, but I don't even pay the booth if I sell a few CDs. So that's.
Right.
But still, we do it because we enjoy doing it. It's the passion that's driving us. Amiga Forever in 1997 was born because we felt the problems that other Amiga users were having, of their Amigas falling apart, a few custom chips, no spare parts, a diverse environment increasingly surrounding the Amiga. So we started using PCs, our Amiga started having problems, we started to have increasing needs of having the two work together. And at some point, when there was no more hardware available, we also imported some of our Amiga configuration into PCs. Now, some people are not considering that Amiga Forever users are in large part Amiga users. It's not that they are just thieves who are destroying the Amiga, as was said, for example, by some in 1997. It was a very difficult decision then, even for Petro, who, you know, at the beginning, emulation, Petro Tyshenko by Amiga.
Yes,
It was not easy. At the time, it was not easy even for him. But then we showed him demos. We helped him. I even helped him repair his Windows machine. You know, it's time you spend together, and you find the time to explain things better. Then you speak with the emulation developers at the time, with Bernd Schmidt and Matthias Ortmann and others. So I was speaking with Petro and Bernd and Matthias, and we had a developers meeting in the same year, 97, UAE developers meeting. So all of these people were involved in the process, and they were happy of the outcome. So at the end, we had Petro, who was representing us quite well, I think, with Gateway, and managed to convince them to accept the contract as we had it modified at the end, because Gateway, you know, also wanted changes and so on. And all of this was difficult, because the Amiga, the people who are still left with Amiga are by definition very active and passionate, and they feel strongly. And when you have strong feelings, you have all that diversity all in one place. And of course, sometimes it's a bit noisy, of course. And it's also one of the reasons why it's so nice to be in the community, because you have so many different voices. But
now, there's something else that was interesting a lot of people may not know. Your company works with the UAE developers. You guys have actually exchanged. You're not just using their product, which is technically free, into your product. Your group has actually worked with them to develop new technologies for UAE. Isn't that correct?
Some UAE developers contributed specifically to Amiga Forever related parts for Amiga Forever.
Right.
And this in turn went freely into the Amiga into the UAE project. So there were investments made, which went. Also, I wrote a little bit of code, and others at Quanta, but also there was external work involved, which was paid, and it went back into the open source project. We keep working with the UAE people. We have a very good relationship, even if some people they now work at other projects. But for example, right now Tony Villan, he's so active. It's great what he's doing, and if I could do more, you know, than providing some technical support on some, you know, we are Amiga developers since the 80s, so we have some materials which are useful for him. But if we could do more, we would. But it has to be admitted that this is also successful, because if it were not open source, there could not be so many people working on an Amiga emulation, including so many different peripherals and testing so many games, and it's a very complex project. So it's good to know that the sales,
you know, of Amiga Forever are actually helping to continue development on WinUAE, really.
Right now, the open source developers are not getting any money at all, unless they work on an Amiga Forever specific enhancement or project which is needed. What we do is we provide free CDs to all contributors, all of them, all the time. If there's anything we can get, like lend you a machine, an old CDTV, CD32, or technical documentation, or send you free developer CDs, which we have to buy, that's okay. But there's no budget in Amiga Forever as a whole to pay thousands of dollars to each developer.
I guess what I was saying is, like, the first time, I remember, this was like version 3 or 4, I think. I saw something that was I've never seen before in UAE, which was the ability to mount and unmount disks inside the Amiga interface. Normally, you'd have to hit F12 and change disks that way through the UAE interface.
Yes.
But it seemed to me that Cloanta developed a methodology where you could change those disks inside the Amiga interface without leaving the Amiga virtual machine.
Yes, that's
And, right. and you guys donated some of that technology back to the project, right?
You know, it's I don't want to take such important sounding claims. It's true that we wrote some code. Well, there's the UA control graphical user interface, which is one thing we wrote. We rewrote. And there was an issue about SCSI and disk change and so on, where it's true that there was an exchange of work with a lot of parties involved.
Sure.
Up to version 6, where we have a new CD file system by Oliver Castle, which we licensed. And that also required changes to fully support the emulation environment. And that in turn allowed Tony to make some changes in the way the UAE SCSI and hard disk emulation work. So yes, it keeps flowing back and forth. You know, we try to keep it professional in the flow of also of feedback and bugs and developer notes, and that also helps, I think.
Well, let's talk about the product specifically. There are two versions, right? Downloadable and CD.
That's right.
And they're varying in price, so I'll let you go ahead and talk about the pricing model and everything. Also discuss, if you would, the differences between what you get for the download, what you get on the CD.
Yes. Basically, the CD gives you additional items of historical interest, like the videos and a broader variety of Amiga ROMs. Other than that, the Amiga pre-configured emulation environments with the 1.3 and 3X, they are the same. The pre-installed applications, the web browser, the demos, and the ready-to-run one-click emulation that goes straight into Amiga OS, they're all the same.
Right, so the very casual user, someone who may be interested in maybe seeing what all the hoopla was about Defender of the Crown,
yeah,
not necessarily interested in running, you know, Marble Madness only runs on 1.1 ROMs, for example. The real casual user, the download package might be sufficient for their needs, in other words.
Yes.
They don't get the CD32 ROMs on that, correct?
We provide with... There's the Amiga Forever Online Edition Plus pack, which is also downloadable. And we try to split some additional multimedia and ROM parts.
That's an additional fee,
yes,
or is that an extra download?
It costs $9.95 more.
Okay, so the download itself is, what, $19.95?
The full version is $29.95.
Okay, and that they buy, download, they have it right then?
Yes.
Well, as soon as they're done downloading it.
It's a 20 megabyte download, and they get all of the things we mentioned.
And then for the extra $10, they can download the extra ROMs, if they want.
There's some MP3s with, yes. It's also, you know, some people still are on a fairly slow connection, and, you know, 20 megabytes already is a big download. So at the end, they still can choose to get the CD version paying only the price difference.
That's good. So if they decide to upgrade, they can get the CD and only pay the difference.
The upgrade price is about the difference between the list prices. And then you have shipping, which you would have anyway when you buy the full version.
Sure.
So, yeah.
So if they decide that they really get into it, Amiga emulation is what they want, but they want to go ahead and get the Deathbed Vigil videos and all that other stuff, easy upgrade path, yeah, not a real problem.
You know, there's some things we would like to improve, and that's an example of some of our limitations, which are budget limitations. We really only have two hands, and it's what we are doing, you know. In our company, we shouldn't even be doing that. We are crazy to just spend days, weeks, months, support and everything. But we enjoy doing that. For example, when somebody gets Amiga Forever and they want the features of the CD, but they also want it now, they should be able to get the download immediately and have the CD sent. Right now, we would have to implement our own shopping cart system in such a way that this is possible, because the companies we work with, they are great companies, they are secure, we place security and professionality number one, so we pay a bit more to have companies like Digital River sell our CDs and the online edition. It costs a bit more to us, and the customers protected much more than if we did things maybe ourselves with our own server and credit card management and everything. So we like to delegate this for extra enhanced security. And it's the same company that IBM, Lotus, and other very large software companies use. but it doesn't give us the flexibility to do some Amiga specific things we'd like to do. And but we're looking at ways to improve that as well.
And one of the things that we hear a lot of feedback, and I think Brian sort of alluded to that earlier in the interview, some people look at the Amiga as a game machine. They don't care about Picasso 96. They don't care about the Mosaic web browser. They want to stick the damn disc in, and they want to play Defender of the Crown. That's all they want to do. They want to play Defender of the Crown. They want to play the period piece games that everyone said the Amiga rules over. Have you guys given thought about a very turnkey Amiga game slanted package where you could bring up a nice list, you want to play Defender of the Crown, you click it, you're playing Defender of the Crown?
Yes. We have thought about a list like that for Amiga Forever 6, where you will notice that we modified the launcher. It's divided into tabs. One tab is dedicated to games, some of which are pre-installed. And the games and videos and the gallery of historical items, they're designed in such a way that there you can have a scrolling list. So right now you can one-click launch a few games which are pre-installed.
Right.
We have spoken with people like the developers of the CAPS project, which you may be familiar with.
Yes, indeed.
What we're trying to encourage to do, because we don't have the resources to do it ourselves or to pay for it. You know, you have thousands of games, but these games don't have a configuration that comes with them.
Correct.
So it would be
sort of a big Amiga site. Well, you know.
Yeah.
I ran the, I can't remember the name of it. AmigaMU.com, I think it was
yes.
that I had. And I ran, that's what half of the things I did were provide configuration files for people.
So what you would need is an emulation software independent configuration, because we must not forget that configuration files change over time.
They do.
Amiga Forever itself doesn't have only UAE, WinUAE, or Mac UAE. We also support Fello, WinFello, for example. It's two emulators, actually. So what you would have to do is, in my opinion, for each game, you would say, okay, this game has a reference system, plus more memory or minus floppy disks. You know, okay, let's take the Amiga 500, but with only one floppy disk, because otherwise it doesn't have enough memory.
Right.
Yeah. Or it must have like a CD32 with an additional 8 megabytes of memory. And it would be, in my opinion, quite simple with the experience which you have when you have a database of thousands of games to be practical. You don't need to overkill and have thousands of hundreds of lines and commands and everything. I think if you have just one reference configuration plus or minus a few items, I think that you can define all games.
Let me ask you this. If somebody, let's say somebody listening to the show, big Amiga nut, not me, because I ain't got that kind of time, but let's say that somebody said, you know, I love the Amiga so much that I'm going to build this database of configurations.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to go through the effort. We're going to work on it. We're going to test it. We're going to make it into a list that, you know, we'll provide you with the information.
Yeah.
Would you be willing to implement that into Amiga Forever?
Oh, great, yes. Not only. If you have seen, I mentioned the launcher before.
Yes.
Which had this thought of a direct connection to a longer list of possibly installed
games.
Yeah,
that's a good point. That's something else that's new. A lot of people have looked at like 3 and 4. I don't even think 5 had that.
No.
There's like, you've got its own built-in online update system.
That's right.
That's something very important.
We have the Amiga Forever launcher, which as a way to one-click launch games, but also we have a software manager, which allows you to go online, and if some people made it available, you could access and download and install into the right directory both the game and the configuration. That's already in Amiga Forever. Now, if a site like Back to the Roots or some other site were willing to just, with some scripts, also create the data which Software Manager can read, then Amiga Forever users would be able to go online with from Amiga Forever itself or from Software Manager itself, click on Back to the Roots. I don't know, then maybe they would be grouped by publisher
or
whatever.
Yes. Publisher, whatever.
Click on a game name, right click download, or right click install. And it would be that easy. No unzip, no copy to the proper directory, and so on. and that's already in there. As you said, it just takes somebody to make that available. But you see, some of these sites, they have agreements whereby they cannot bypass the banners they have on the site. They are right. Semi-commercial, so they are sponsored, maybe at least the bandwidth. You know, they have to pay for it some way.
Right.
People don't think about these things, but even a free site, even AmigaForever.com, it has huge bandwidth costs.
Sure.
That's why we redesigned it recently with more text and less graphics. It just had to be done because it was too expensive. These download sites, by definition, since they are download sites, they have to have some banners. And when you start to bypass that, you start wondering, how do I sponsor that?
Right.
Will Amiga Forever, or Software Manager, will it have to host a little banner at the bottom? Maybe, I don't know how it has to be done. Nowadays we see chat clients and other free software, they all have a little area where they have a banner. Maybe that's one way it could be done. And that's only for bandwidth.
Now, would you be willing to open up your technology so that, let's say I ran a free site,
yeah,
and I could couple in a little package, maybe a .amz file or something, that your product would use or support, they could download it, and it's already associated with Amiga Forever, that could be brought in, basically launched through Software Manager. So you still have to come to my site,
yes.
You still have to look at my banner, you still have to click through and do whatever. When you get that, and you open it, and it associates itself with Amiga Forever, and Amiga Forever just pops up and says, installing, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Could that be done?
Yes, it could be done. It could already be done. What you describe is a bit... Yeah, it has to be worked on also on the website, not on the webmaster side of your site.
Right.
Because on our side, it's already there. We can just add one entry in Software Manager where you can register a new publisher. I mean, we can advertise you as a publisher.
Right.
The user right clicks and says register publisher, and then you're in.
And but instead of after you're going through the Software Manager to get the stuff, you come to my site to get the stuff. It would be it'd be like a Mozilla plugin.
It can be done. You know, for example, Windows Media, what they do for some trailers, for some movie trailers, is when you download the trailer, you also open a web page. That could be another idea. So it's not as annoying as completely bypassing something which is one click and automatic, but it also pleases the
hosting.
Yeah, the hosting, advertising, or whatever arrangement is in place by opening the website that is meant to be open. Otherwise, it's a very dynamic thing. But let's imagine, this is science fiction, but let's imagine that all of these games could be easily downloaded. That there was just one front end to everything. It could be free, it could be commercial, there could be different front ends doing different things on the same framework. It could be that somebody could start complaining because now they start smelling money. Now you have thousands of games, people can play them for free, whereas nowadays they're just mad about finding ways to make extra dollars here and there.
Well, we were just talking about this in the last interview. You know, we were talking about the fact that, well, you saw, you've been around here and see what happens when somebody really brings back interest to something. They blood, they sweat, they cry, and they spend all this money on bandwidth. They give just gajillions amount of their time. They put this beautiful site up, this shrine. They make games available. And then as soon as the company that actually has some sort of legitimate claim to that, they go, I smell money. And then they turn around, and instead of saying, hey, you know, you've built this audience that I'm going to now make money on, instead of thanking them, they're sending them a cease and desist order.
It's always a challenge on multiple fronts. I was thinking also about the game companies. You know, now they're very generous, and they're making things available for free. I mean, you have at least for now. And that's... I mean, we must be very happy that it's like this now, and let's hope that more game developers will contribute to this. Because, you know, there are here at the Classic Gaming Shows projects and people who try to preserve information, descriptions about games. But in the Amiga community, people try to preserve the games themselves, the configurations and everything. That's a very precious thing, I think. There are people working on preserving disk images with the copy protection just as like it was meant to be. They want every bit on that floppy disk, even if it was not standard, they want it preserved. And that's a lot of work, which requires also proper permissions and so on. And so far, the Amiga has been in the very narrow lane of, juggling between having a low profile, but also venturing into these very ambitious projects with the permission of some very important names nowadays. I mean, Electronic Arts, they allowed Amiga games to be downloaded for free. I think that's exceptional. Other
that's
companies
so unlike
too.
Them. They must not have been able to smell enough money on it.
Yeah, but what if, you know?
It's interesting. Well, we've kept you for long enough. Do you have any last-minute things to mention about Amiga Forever that you'd like to, that we might have missed? Or?
No, it's been a pleasure to be with you, Shane.
It's been very nice. I mean, we've talked in email for years.
Yeah,
but,
that's right.
This will be the first time we actually got to hook up.
I wish I could attend more shows like this. But
well, yeah, but you said you're in Italy, for crying out loud. You know, kind
of. Yeah, most of the time, the development I do is there. Yes, and
that's a long trip.
For a classic gaming show, as I said, our budget is very tight, and I have to subsidize it by also visiting some other clients, and that's why I'm here now. Otherwise, I wouldn't be able to be here. But Amiga Forever 6, really, it has. As you said, there's a bit of everything, and that is also, it creates an identity issue, of course, but there's a bit for everybody and much more. I mean, the videos, the history, the culture, all consistent, attention to detail, one-click runs, games, and it's so refined in version 6. I think I have a problem probably explaining all of that, because the more you go into details, it's... you're adding complexity to it, but I think you should try it yourself. You will try it yourself. Maybe you can do it better than I can. It's. I think it's amazing. It made people cry, you know.
I'd like to try it too, please.
Yeah, of course.
I've got a copy. You don't mind if he uses my key, right?
No. He will get his own one.
Oh, yes. Well, very good then. So, you get your own.
Of course.
I didn't hook my brother up, did I? I'm not hooking you up.
Maybe we can organize like a raffle or something for your radio.
Oh, we'd love to do that.
Oh, we'd love to do that. Yeah. Maybe send them on an Amiga scavenger hunt.
Yeah,
we haven't done one of those in a while. Something like that, and go find all the Amiga artifacts. We'll send them to different sites and make them look stuff up. And
there's one thing I'd like to mention. Actually, we have an ongoing project of preserving Amiga videos. We have terabytes of data now. We try to do the best possible conversion of whatever videotapes people may have with Amiga-related content. Be it from user groups, being from, you know, some TV ads recorded on TV, internal use, trade show things, whatever. We try to preserve that, and we do that at no cost. So you get back a DVD with a professional digital conversion. Then we also, of course, try to get the rights to bring that in a future version of Amiga Forever. But most important of all, I'd like to stress that these are videos which are fading over time. We had some really terrible things already seen on precious VHS tapes, and I don't want this to get lost. So
you're calling out and saying, yeah, if anybody out there has videotape, yeah, of Amiga, now would you accept it in a digital format if they don't feel like taking their tape and duping and send it? So if they're willing to capture, I mean, this stuff's common now. I mean, you,
yes,
can sort in their capture to MPEG,
yes, definitely,
and
yes,
they can get a hold of you and make sure you get that.
Yes, DV format is best, but any other format as well. If they can, we can discuss this, of course, by email.
And you're looking for pretty much anything Amiga related,
yes,
commercials, user group videos.
Yes.
Your kid opening his Amiga on his birthday when you got him for his birthday or something. Just anything like that. Anything that's Amiga related.
That could
related.
Be interesting as well, because it's part of the culture, you think. Yes.
It is.
Yes.
Actually, now that you mentioned, I've got a couple things on tape I'll send, mm-hmm, you. Yeah. I just have to capture
would
it.
Be
though.
Great, yes.
Some old New Tech demos when Kiki Stockhammer was running around pimping herself in the New Tech.
Those were days.
Those were the days.
And then we'll have a Blu-ray disc with 100 gigabytes of videos, you know.
Too funny. Well, Michael, thanks so much for taking time away from their booth, and it's been great to finally meet you.
Yeah, it's been my pleasure. Thank you, both of you. Thank you.
Thank you. We'd like to thank Michael Badilana from Cloanto, not only for his great interview, but also his generosity in providing us with those great copies of Amiga Forever 6 CDs to give away here on the show with our special Amiga contest. And
As I part your way this month, I would like to once again tell my good friend Brian Kittheim-Smith, who is no longer with us. I'd like to let you know, for those of you who might have missed an episode or two, go to goodbyebrian.com to understand why Brian is no longer with us. We still miss you, buddy. We still miss you, and the show just doesn't feel the same without you. And special shouts out to Ruth, his widow. Keep your chin up, girl. We're all here for you. So anyway, folks, this is Shane R. Monroe saying until next time, keep it retro.